So I'm really pleased to welcome you to the sixth webinar in the Fostering Potential webinar programme. My name is Susan Saw, I'm the project manager of the programme. I'm really pleased to welcome Sam Turner from Become.
Brilliant, thank you very much. It's a real pleasure to speak to you about this. My name is Sam and I work for Become, which is the charity for children in care and young care leavers. As you'll see on the first slide, my job title is officially Voice and Influencing Manager, which is quite a fancy way of saying policy manager, but at Become we try to make sure that all of our policy activity is really directly informed by the views and experiences of care experience young people. So I have the absolute pleasure of trying to listen to as many different young people as possible and try and make sure that their insights, their experiences, their voices are really shaping future policy and service provision. As you can hopefully tell, I'm originally from the Northeast and sometimes have the tendency to talk quite quickly. So if I'm not sort of being particularly clear or you need anything clarified or you just want me to slow down, please don't worry and just message in the chat and I'll make sure I do that. Brilliant. I'll just go on to the first slide then. So as a quick overview, I'll give you a little bit of an introduction to Become and who we are, and I'll talk a little bit about one of our specific projects, which is the Propel website. And for those of you who maybe participated in the previous webinar in this series, I think you spoke a little bit about Propel during that one, so I'll just recap some of the things that might have been mentioned then. We'll then talk a little bit about what we know about care experience learners in higher education currently and some of the patterns that have emerged and some of the research that's been done, just as a bit of a background. And then I'll go into some kind of top tips, which we picked up via our kind of conversations with lots of care experience students in higher education at the minute, and things like we picked up through our care advice line and that sort of thing. And then we'll finally end on any sort of questions or discussion points that you might have about things that we've covered today. Brilliant. So as promised, a little bit about Become. So we are the charity for children in care and young care leavers. And we kind of fill two sort of main functions, I suppose. The first is that we provide lots of direct help and support for young people themselves. Through different means. So we run something called a care advice service. So if any care experienced young person has questions about often their rights and entitlements, often they may have heard a couple of different messages from social workers, personal advisors, carers, and they might be a bit confused as to which one's correct, or they might just want a little bit of advice and support with things like preparing for university, or they're a bit worried about an upcoming placement move, whatever it might be, we've got a team of trained staff who can kind of help them through that. The other half of our work, which is the work that I lead on, is this idea of making sure that the care system is as good as it possibly can be. So we listen to lots of different young people and try and make sure that their views are taken into sort of policy development, both in central government and in local authorities. A few of the things that we do are kind of pictured on the slides there. We have a series of care fact sheets, which I'll talk about a little bit later on, which kind of dispel some of the myths for young people. We're in the process of moving quite a lot of our content from our magazines online. Some of you might know us as the Who Cares Trust, which was actually our old name. I think we changed in 2015. And we run the all-party parliamentary group for Looked After Children and Care Leavers, which for us is a fantastic way to bring lots of care experience young people directly into the heart of power in Westminster. But enough about us. I talk a little bit about the Propel website. So a few years ago, we launched this new website called Propel, and this is a comprehensive database that's searchable online, which tells you and any sort of care experience young person about all of the different support which universities and colleges can offer them if they decide to go to there. And it also has lots of information about why they might want to consider higher education, what's some of the benefits, what maybe some of the drawbacks. And it kind of helps them through navigating the student finance process and all of the different admission side of things as well. So you can see that every year we try and refresh the content and we will approach every college that offers higher education and every university higher education institution in the UK and ask them what support they offer, particularly to care leavers and care experienced young people. And we put all of that information into our Propel website, and that's designed to really help young care experience people with deciding their next steps, figuring out which university or college might be the best one for them to attend. So I've got a few images which kind of show you how that website maybe looks in practice, but I do encourage you to have a look and have a search for yourselves. You'll see that there's usually, hopefully, a very nice picture of whoever the named contact is in that institution. So I've used the example of Salford with a lovely picture of Jane because they've got a really, really good profile, I think, on the panel. There'll be a little information at the front about some of the general kind of support the university offers. And then you'll also notice there's a checklist, and that's pictured on the right-hand side of your screens. And this is sort of a list of options which we know are typically quite commonplace across universities that looks at, do they offer year-round accommodation? Do they offer specific bursaries or other financial support? What kind of outreach offers they might be making? And what else they can help with in terms of careers advice or application sessions? So it's kind of a good way of getting, I guess, a really brief overview of what it is that institution might offer. Absolutely. So yeah, we would encourage you where you can to definitely have a look at that and encourage the young people that you're caring for to do so as well. Just a very quick note on definitions. I've tried where possible during the course of this presentation to be quite clear when I'm talking about care leavers and where I'm talking about care experienced young people. These definitions are often quite flexible depending on who it is you're talking to. And I think particularly in this sphere of higher education, you might find that these terms are used often interchangeably, whereas some universities might have more kind of discrete definitions of what these are. So just to kind of clarify for the purposes of this morning, when I'm using care leaver, I'm trying to refer to that sort of statutory, almost legal definition of what a care leaver is, typically as a former relevant child, if I'm using the official terms. And that's someone who was in care on their 16th birthday and spent 13 weeks in care before the age of four, or sorry, since the age of 14. And that definition is one that the local authority will typically have, and that will be the sort of key, if you like, to accessing the sort of full comprehensive package of support. Universities may align with that definition of what as well, but often they may use the term care leaver when they actually mean care experience and overall. Or potentially vice versa. So I guess just maybe a word of warning when you may be looking at different university websites, is it worth sort of clarifying exactly who it is they're talking about. And when I'm talking about care experience, I'm typically referring to a slightly broader definition, which includes those who may be spent some time in care and when they were younger, but may have left the care system through adoption or because they returned to their birth families or whatever their circumstances might be. Well, so as promised, I'll do a little bit of background just to sort of what we know about care experience learners in higher education at the minute. The facts and figures on the next few slides come particularly from the work of Dr. Neil Harrison, who's a fantastic researcher at the Rees Centre in Oxford. And I'll make sure there's a link to his work at the end of the presentation. But if you're interested in some of the things I'm talking about, I definitely recommend going and having a look at that research that he does. So there are over 7,000 sort of care experience students, English care experience students, studying in the UK at the minute. And that's about 0.79% of the total student body, so quite a small number. And of that 7,000, about 40% of those are care leavers, so who fulfil that specific term. Roughly half of that number are studying courses around sort of education, social care, often social work. Creative art is also a really, really common subject choice for a lot of care experience students. And we tend to find they're typically underrepresented in courses like science, technology, and other humanities like history and geography. And there are a few other kind of key characteristics that we find across the cohort. They are much more likely to sort of be identified as female, so about 59% of care experience learners in PhD are women. Importantly, as we'll come to this a little bit later as well, they're much more likely to be generally older than their peers. So about 50% of care experience students in PhD go there after the age of 21. And that's what universities will refer to as mature students. So if you see the term mature students mentioned, it's a student who was 21 on the day or older on the day they start their course. Full-time learners are typically older than their peers, so about 17% of care experience full-time learners are over the age of 25, and that compares to about 8% to their peers. So the part-time sort of learners tend to reflect a similar sort of age profile, but especially for full-time, we do find that care experience learners are typically older and maybe start their courses a bit later. They're more likely not to be UK nationals, and they're also more likely to be part-time. So the Open University is actually the most common destination for care experience learners for lots of different reasons, as I'm sure you can understand. And particularly, sort of, I'll talk a little bit about the benefits maybe of some of that flexible part-time sort of distance and blended learning. Really importantly, well, I'll come back to this as well, about 25% of full-time and 38% of part-time care experience learners have declared a disability, and that's about twice the sort of typical rate compared to their peers as well. And this is particularly important thinking about their access to university as well. And they're predominantly along the sort of social, emotional, and mental health and the side of disability, if we're talking about that in that context. Also importantly, they're more likely to have studied qualifications other than A-levels, so less likely to have had that standard route into higher education, where they go to sixth form, do a set of A-levels, go at the age of 18 as a school leaver. About three times more likely to have done something like an Access to HE diploma, and we tend to find. And that also follows on for this next slide. So this isn't evidenced quite as well in the data that we have, just depending on where you pull it from. But about 10% of students who are doing higher education courses are actually doing them in an FE college. And we expect very much that care leavers and care experience learners are overrepresented in that population. So just to summarise a few things then. We know that care leavers overall are less likely to end higher education than their peers, but it's not all sort of doom and gloom. You'll often hear things like 6% is a figure that I feel is used quite a lot. 6% of care leavers will progress on higher education. And we know that that's actually a relatively significant underrepresentation of the numbers. And this is just because of the way that data is collected. So then that's where terms local authorities give to the Department for Education, and it only encompasses those who are age 19 to 21. And because we know that care leavers typically go later, that's actually missing out on quite a lot of care experience students. Neil Harrison's research shows that actually if we're looking slightly older, to the age of 23, for example, that figure increases immediately to about 12%. But we know that actually if we're looking, again, a little bit later on, we're looking at part-time as well, we expect actually that much more care leavers go on higher education than maybe gets reported quite often in the press. And particularly the thinking about the kind of cohort that we have, because we know that predominantly care experience learners are less likely to attain quite as well as their peers at GCSE, and particularly because they're normally sort of three times more likely to have a special educational need, nine times more likely to have a statement of need, for example, those two factors are really the most sort of significant in terms of plotting their progression in higher education. And actually, GCSE attainment and presence of special educational needs accounts for over 90% of the statistical sort of variation in terms of progression rate. So actually, if we control for those factors, what we find out is that that gap sort of between care experience learners and their peers closes quite quickly. And what that sort of tells us is that there's maybe not a huge cohort of young people who have really good grades, who simply aren't going to higher education because they don't think it's for them, or they maybe are worried about the costs. And that's absolutely going to be the case with some, but I just kind of want to really sort of emphasise the importance of GCSE attainment and sort of managing special educational needs in terms of progression. Right, I'll quickly move on. So we know that care leavers are more likely to have pauses too or delays in their study. They tend to have much more of a stop-start experience with higher education than their peers. This is one that I think is particularly important because it's something that the data is really clear on, is that unfortunately we do tend to find that care experience students are much more likely to drop out of their courses and not return. Neil Harrison's research says that about 38% of the cohort he identified and withdrew from their courses and didn't return after starting, which is really significant. And that's even sort of if we do start to look at sort of controlling for some things as well. So if there's kind of an area that we're really focusing on, universities and local authorities making a difference, it's supporting students actually get to university in itself. However, some really good news is that actually when students are supported to retain their degrees, they perform equally as well as their peers. And so they're just as likely to go on and get really good rated degrees which kind of just shows the academic potential and the achievement that character intimate people have when then they get the right support and starting and staying at university. Brilliant. So the next section, I thought we'd just quickly recap some of the available support that you can get, that young people can get from their local authority and also from the university or college they might be going to. So when young people are in care, they have support from the virtual school, who are there to really ensure that the educational attainment of every child in that local authority's care is as good as it can be. And they are responsible for using that additional pupil premium funding to support young people to attain it as well as they can do. And a lot of that will be written into the personal education plans that young people will have. When students go on, well, when young people are in the leaving care process, they'll have access to a personal advisor for lots of support, often around access to higher education, and they'll also have access to a pathway plan. And we find that that actually is a really crucial document. Things do get written into that plan, they are much more likely to happen, and people will take some accountability and ownership over making sure those things do happen. So that can be a really, really important sort of mechanism for supporting young people to sort of access and succeed when they're in HE. So every young care leaver should get access to a £2,000 or more higher education bursary from the local authority. We tend to find this is typically paid in instalments over the 3 years or the 4 years that might be there. But this is a sort of statutory bursary that's written into legislation. So that should be available for every young person that goes on to higher education. And they should also be providing them with accommodation or support to find accommodation during that vacation period. If they're not, for example, staying with their foster carers as part of their staying part arrangement or similar. The universities and colleges then, there is not the same kind of legislative backing for the kind of support they provide. But with things like sort of quality marks that have been in the past, we found that actually universities and colleges now provide often a really, really good level of at least base support for young people who are leaving care. This is typically in the form of a designated named contact who can really act as an advocate for that young person across the institution and make sure that they have all the information and support they need. And it might be through things like additional funding, and this might be sort of ring fence bursaries for young people, or it might be as part of a wider sort of bursary provision. Importantly, I'll come onto this in a second, specific kind of targeted disability mental health support. Because we know that that is a really, really important factor for young people who are leaving care and going on to university. They may provide year-round accommodation as well for those who maybe won't be staying in their local area, as well as lots of outreach and advice, but I'll talk a little bit about some of that in a second as well. Okay, so the sort of final part of what I really wanted to talk about was just some kind of top tips for what we advise foster carers to maybe be looking for when they are beginning to sort of advise a young person about potentially going on to higher education in the future. So, number one is start conversations as early as possible, really. We find that there's a real sort of important aspect of just normalising higher education sort of within the context of that home and making sure that there's a sort of early dialogue about what a young person's aspirations might be, but also what their expectations might be. We often tend to find that these are mismatched. And unfortunately, I feel like there are some people who feel that, you know, if only young people had aspirations and, you know, care leavers aspired to be doctors and lawyers and nurses and plumbers and things like that, that they would do. And actually, we do tend to find that they hold aspirations for themselves just as much, but often it's the professionals supporting them who maybe don't hold the same aspirations. And actually, their expectations of what they might find don't sort of match with what they'd really like to have. So sort of figuring out where that gap is and how you might close the gap is particularly important sort of as early as possible. And also conversations around what higher education looks like, and this is something I say to young people, whether they're character is or not, is just really explore the diversity of what HE can be. Unfortunately, I think in recent years we've really sort of narrowed down to this model of you leave as an 18-year-old school leaver, you go on to a full-time course for 3 years at a university far away, and that kind of boarding school style model isn't the be-all and end-all. There are so many different forms of HE, part-time, going when they're older, doing sort of distance and blended learning, just sort of exploring the huge range of what higher education can be is particularly important, because they might find that actually that's better for them, even if their friends might be going off to do sort of a more standard kind of route. And importantly, something that really comes out of the research is this idea of identity and disclosure. So kind of having a plan for how a young person is going to navigate their career experience when they get to university, and maybe even when they're writing things like a personal statement. Is it something they're going to tell friends immediately? Is it something they're going to sort of be disclosing to staff maybe, who maybe don't know? And kind of having a plan, because we do tend to find that young people, they may go to university not really having thought about this, and then they get inundated with questions like, oh, what are you doing for Christmas? Oh, you know, oh, my parents are visiting this weekend, it's like, how are yours? And often that can be quite a difficult thing to do and to think about on the fly. So having some sort of kind of plan in place for how that's going to work sort of as early as possible can be quite a sort of settling and help with some of those more uncomfortable conversations that could happen. Brill, the second then is research and reach out. So try and talk to as many local universities as you can, and particularly look to ask to speak with outreach or widening participation teams, because they're typically where these named contacts will be. But do use Propel, they'll have a list of all the named contacts for the universities in your area. So do get in touch with them and ask if they do something. It might be an outreach session, it might be a special open day. They might even have sort of financial support for care experienced learners trying to attend an open day. So do get in touch as early as possible. Talk to local authorities and virtual schools about how maybe, especially if they're under 16, using that pupil premium funding. And is there anything that you've maybe found that they can actually pay for to sort of help with that GCSE attainment and that progression for higher education? Sort of universities will often, I've seen a few people that invite people to actually hold PET meetings or pathway planning meetings at the institution as well, and they'll be able to sort of provide an advisor there if that's something the young person feels comfortable having. And if, you know, if they have a real desire to go to university, often having that sort of institutional support can be really helpful. So do inquire about that if you think it's something they'd be interested in doing. Have a look at different charities who might be able to help you out. Some of these will be specifically for care experienced learners, and they may not be focused entirely on higher education, but they may be able to provide with some support. So for those of you in London, the Drive Forward Foundation are a great resource who do lots of work about transition to employment, but also others like the Rees Foundation offer sort of small grants and things like that, and Care Leaders Association help care leaders of all ages with any sort of issues that they're having. But also charities who maybe don't work exclusively with care experienced young people, but support in this access to higher education. So I'll make a list for you, but things like Causeway Education, Inter University, the Access Project, you may access through the virtual school or the physical school. And sort of look at different programmes, things like the Sutton Trust Summer Schools or university-owned programmes. Typically, care experienced learners will have priority places for them, and they can be really, really advantageous. And I say that as a graduate of a Sutton Trust Summer School myself. Third one then, making sure that applications to support as much as possible. And the one key method would be to sort of tick that box on the UCAS form, which asks the student when they're applying if they have any care experience at all. It's really, really important for just unlocking that immediate support from the name contact. And it means that often they're automatically enrolled in the processes of application for bursaries and things like that. And it just makes sure there's not a delay at all. And that information will only go to those who absolutely need to have it. And it is confidential, so it won't be shared with those who do not need to know. Contextualized admissions is one of these things which actually not many people often know about. It's not necessarily advertised in the way that it could be. And every university will normally have a contextual admissions policy. And that says that for every student who's applying, they will look at their grades and their academic profile, but it'll be taken into the context of how they achieve that. So if they face really significant educational disruption or personal disruption or difficult family circumstances, for example, that will be taken into consideration when they're being made an offer. So that's why it's really important to take that UCAS box for maybe a mention about care experience to go and say the teacher's reference, if that's appropriate, if there's a contact at school there. Because it will be looked at by the admissions teams, and often they may be doing variable offers. So that can be, for example, if a course is asking for 3 Bs at A level, they may actually reduce that to sort of a B, C, and a C to recognise the disruption that young person's had, but knowing they'll perform just as well when they get to university. Sometimes this is conditional on them actually doing a programme, so it might be like a Sutton Trust Summer School or Realising Opportunities or something like that. But that's why it's really important to look at it as early as possible. But it will really be a mechanism whereby lots of young people can make it to university if they maybe not wouldn't have done so with that same entry requirement otherwise. Have a look at disabled students' allowances as well as applying as early as possible to student finance. A huge amount of support and money is available, and I'm happy to talk about how the whole loan system works if that's helpful as well. But applying as an independent student and making sure that the evidence is submitted as early as possible from the local authority means that they'll get access to that maximum amount of loan available, and that'll be sort of the same throughout the entire duration of the course. So kind of applying as early as possible for that is really important, and looking at disabled students' allowances for things like equipment costs for those who do have declared disability. And also remember, sort of, often universities will continue recruiting for courses even beyond that 15th of January deadline. And I sort of say that with caution is to say don't leave until then. But if the young person maybe decides not to apply and has a change of heart, do get in touch, because often they will have undersubscribed courses which they'll be happy to admit something to go on to after that date. And particularly when it comes to clearing and adjustment, that process after the results are released, universities will often drop their direct grade requirements to fill courses, and they'll be particularly looking for underrepresented groups like care leavers to join. So it's a good sort of opportunity there for students who maybe want to do a bit more shopping around at that point, or who maybe haven't got anything sorted quite yet. Right, I'll do these last few quickly because I know I'm running out of time. Finally, have a conversation about accommodation. We know that lots of character and young people will want to stay in their local area to have sort of access to, you know, the carers who've been supporting them. Or equally, if they want to sort of take access of the accommodation the local authority can provide. However, we do hear quite a lot about students who feel often as commuter students. Mm-hmm. It can sort of affect their integration with the university life and their friends. And I guess it's opening up an early conversation about what that young person might want from their university experience and help them mitigate some of the issues that might arise if they're not, say, staying in university halls. But do have a look for the universities who can offer 365 a year round accommodation, and particularly a shout out to Unite Foundation, who do a really comprehensive package of scholarship support, including accommodation at the university they partner with. And then finally, plan for that sort of transition period. We know that sort of first few weeks and that first term leading up to Christmas is often where things start to maybe go a little bit wrong, or some of these issues might start to arise. And it can often be made worse by poor planning between local authorities and the university. So doing whatever you can do to get those two to talk with each other as early as possible and make a plan for what's going to happen. How is that sort of transfer of maybe some support going to happen between the personal advisor and the named contact? What is the role of that personal advisor going to be over that time? How is the university going to offer support? Is it going to be sort of in some practical things like helping move belongings? You know, even universities, I know some of them will go and help people with their first shopping that they do when they arrive, which is fantastic. And sort of being aware of some of the lag time associated with developing paperwork and getting that from the local authority and from social workers, and some of the sort of things around sort of managing independently and financial management, and how guarantors going to work for students who are getting accommodation from elsewhere. Just kind of starting those conversations as early as possible with the local authority, so there's a real clear plan in place for those first few weeks where, for all students, it can be a really sort of anxious and nerve-wracking time. I've made a list, I won't go through this now, but there's a list of other organisations you might want to push for support, but do please feel free to get in touch with us and obviously use the fantastic resource that Susan and the rest of the team at the Fostering Network have as well. I'll just do a little shout out for a couple of things. So our Helping to Reach Higher fact sheet is a fact sheet for young people and professionals who are supporting young people in higher education, and has a list on the reverse of it of lots of different funding options, sort of outside of just student finance. And there's also a UCAS parent newsletter, which I recommend signing up to, which will give you sort of timely updates as to what you might want to be thinking about in terms of supporting people at various points throughout the year. And there's a link to some of Neil Harrison's research as well. But otherwise, thank you very much. I hope that was useful. I'll stick around for as long as I can do, answering any questions that you might have. But if you do think of anything, please do get in touch with me via my email address or via Twitter, if you prefer. But yeah, thank you very much.